Our meeting will come to order. A quorum is present. Members, as you know, today we'll be dealing with the policy omnibus bill. Let me just say a little word about next week. We will meet Tuesday for sure because there are bills that have passed or will pass first deadline in the Senate that we will hear. One of those will be Representative Moran's bill. I'm not sure about the content. Ms. Mayo could tell us about that. But there will be about five bills Tuesday. Whether or not we need to meet Thursday will depend on whether or not we can get through these five or six bills on Tuesday, one of which will be Representative Detmer's PE bill, and that may take a little while. So Thursday is tentative, and then it'll be the call of the chair thereafter. So after the break, I know that there are some informational hearings that have been requested. Representative Erdahl would like to have his civics test heard. And the bill that I introduced on as a companion to Senator Hand's bill on Minneapolis division, Representative Dabney, perhaps you could weigh in on that. Perhaps an informational hearing on that. I just don't know at this point. We'll let the senators proceed with their cause. And then, members, remember that after this weekend, we will address Ms. Mayo as Ms. Johnson. So we wish her well on her wedding day Saturday to Mr. Aaron Johnson. And we're so delighted that she's going to have this new happiness in her life. So think of her on Saturday as she commits her self to Mr. Johnson. That is, I'm just so happy for her.
Madam Chair?
She's very special to me, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Madam Chair? Yes, Representative Dabney.
She is to all of us.
Yes.
And while this is traditionally probably the most partisan day of the year in any committee, we do have some treats and wish the temporary Ms. Mayo all the best on Saturday and for many years afterwards.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. You know, she's very quiet about this, so we don't want to embarrass her too much. Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to join Representative Dabney
wedding bells.
In congratulations to Carmen. Carmen, you and I have served together for a number of years, and you've always been a straight-up classy person, professional. I've always appreciated working with you. And, you know, quite frankly, Madam Chair, you know, when you can say that with folks on the other side of the aisle, you know, either way, you know, that really speaks something about the character and integrity of the individual. So congratulations. We're really, really, really happy for you.
Thank you, Representative Mariani.
Representative Erdahl, you're already married.
Representative Erdahl, with that said, would you examine the minutes, please, and move approval?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, they're very fine
minutes. Representative Erdahl moves these very fine minutes of March 17th as we celebrate the approaching marriage of Carmen Mayo to Aaron Johnson. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, I will take off the table House File 1591 and offer the delete all amendment, the 1DE, I should say the 1591DE1 amendment that was part of our walkthrough on Tuesday. And I will move that. Okay. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the delete all is adopted. Members, then I have an author's amendment. It is coded H1591A5-3. I will move the author's amendment. And just to provide you with the fact that there's a change on page 6 from vice to assistant for principal, since principals today are referred to as assistant principals, and that's a technical change. We have a technical change to the Norton bill on page 47. We have added Representative Dabney's rigorous course taking information on a variety of courses, AP, IB, PSEO, concurrent enrollment, as laid out in the author's amendment. And that'll be added where it fits in the bill, as you can see from the coding. And then we've made some change on page 2 of the amendment, page 60 of the bill, in regard to dyslexia and our literacy plans, so that that's been clarified. The School Boards Association asked for some changes that are referenced on the top of page 3, and adding to the WILLS language on page 85 of the bill will be the Minnesota School Boards Association. They want to be included in that. And then some changes to the charter school language on page 95 and 98. Those are requests by either the department or by the community for the deaf and hard of hearing. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the author's amendment is adopted. So, members, what we have before us is a policy bill that the author would code as innovative in the area of teacher licensure, of unrequested leave, of some of classroom approaches that we think are needed in the area of project-based and service learning. There is also in the bill a major piece on test reduction that follows the recommendation, or for the most part, the recommendation of the governor's task force. So, members, with that, I think we will begin to amend the House File 1591, delete all that has now been amended by the author's amendment, and we'll begin with Representative Christensen, the A6 amendment. And Representative Christensen moves the A6 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, members, as you can see, it's easy to read, nice and short. It corrects what is somewhat of an omission in, we omitted in the original language, educational cooperative as well as education district.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and amendment A6 is adopted to the delete all as it has been already amended by the author's amendment. Representative Urusso is not here yet, so we'll move to Representative Pearson offers the A4 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative Pearson.
Yes. The A4 amendment deals with the practice or student teachers and just making sure that the practice or student teachers are using teachers who have at least 3 years of experience and that are not under an improvement process. The teachers that are giving them direction aren't under an improvement process. Just strengthening the standard of who those teachers are, or student teachers are being mentored or taught through.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. Discussion, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I've spoken with some of the advocates about this, and I think it's a good amendment. We should adopt it.
And the Senate has included it in their file, so it's good news. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted, and we're on to, oh my goodness, we have Representative Christensen again, because we had the Bly Amendment next, but he's not here yet. Representative Christensen, the A9 amendment. I will move that, and please explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This echoes back to a little bit of our discussion over the special ed online case management reporting system we discussed a couple weeks ago. This has the department, this amendment differs from that discussion in that it allows the department to go forward and develop a contract for that system, and but takes out the requirement, making it mandatory for school districts beginning in the 2018-2019 school year. It allows school districts to have the option to contract with the vendor that works best for their district, local control, and I think it kind of removes a one-size-fits-all mandate that we had in the original legislation.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christensen, in other words, the attempt on the part of the state to create a uniform reality out there where we can make it easier for students to be able to have their special ed needs tracked across the state. We're going to back off of that. We're still going to allow the department to create the uniform filing system. However, on lines 234 to 235, any expectation on the part of the state for us to make sure that there's a consistent application and participation across the state, we're going to back off of that. So I just want to be clear about that.
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, thanks for that question. I should have addressed this in the original explanation. This also requires school districts to contract with a vendor that uses a universal filing system. So the systems will be able to talk to each other. So if a student moves between school districts, whichever vendor that district contracts with, it will be able to, the information will be able to be transferred and compared.
Representative Mariani.
So, Madam Chair, I see the language and compatibility. I just want to make sure that we're not creating loopholes for districts to get away from the full length of requirements that are in 125A.085, particularly paragraph B, 1 through 4, which, among other things, includes obviously includes reducing teachers' paperwork burden, which is a big deal, but also addresses language and other barriers and disparities that prevent parents from understanding and communicating information. So would your language then not do violence to that expectation on the part of the state that as these independent school districts enter into these individual vendor relationships, that all of these requirements that are currently in statute in 125A.085 be consistently adhered to in those contracts?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, this allows the local school districts to make the decision that's best for their students, the families in their district. I've heard from lots of school districts, special ed administrators, special education teachers, lots of special education teachers that are concerned about a one-size-fits-all mandate coming from the state. This allows local school districts to talk with their parents, to talk with the teachers, the administrators, and make a decision that's best for their community.
And Chair.
Representative Mariani.
And Chair, Representative Christensen, that's exactly the problem, however. I mean, we've had that philosophical approach for years, and so therefore the nightmare that exists in our state relative to both paperwork, overburdensome paperwork as students move from one district to the other, and you know apples don't match up with apples here. But again, I just want to be really clear, and I'm not sure your language does this, but I think for the record, I want to be really clear about what the intent here. On lines 2.18 to 2.20, the state currently requires that as a part of this, accountability, helpful instrument, that when it comes to language and other barriers and disparities that prevent parents from understanding and communicating information about the needs of their children with disabilities, that every district will be required, regardless of, every district will be required to make sure that their system addresses this and is capable of doing that. Is it your intent that every district do that, or is it your intent that locals just simply can decide not to do that and they feel it doesn't apply to them?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I'd like to turn to Lisa Larson for perhaps an interpretation of that.
Thank you.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, in reading the language that's in Section 8 of the H1591A9, the first sentence is not part of the original Christensen bill. And what that first sentence requires is that any online case management reporting system that a local district were to adopt would have to be compatible with the online system for compliance reporting under Section 9 that Representative Mariani is referring to. And only to the extent that a local district system is compatible with the system proposed and currently being developed under Section 9 would a district comply with the law.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Ms. Larson, again, I just want to be real clear. So when it comes to 1 through 4 in Section B, and I'm specifically targeting in on the lines 2.18 to 220, under this legislation, under this proposal, every district will be able to comply with that expectation. Not only able, but will be required to comply with that expectation.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, part of Section 9, which you are referring to, begins by saying that among other outcomes, the system must, and then you are pointing to Clause 4. Mm-hmm. In the language that appears in Section 8, there is a direction to school districts, and school districts are allowed to contract only with a student information system vendor employing a universal filing system that is compatible with the online system for compliance reporting under what is Section 9. So unless it were possible to have a compatible system that were without meeting the requirements of these clauses, the clauses would exist in the department online system, and consequently, in order to comply, any individual contractor would also need to have some kind of mechanism to be compatible with those requirements.
So, Madam Chair, I think
Representative Mariani.
I think I'm satisfied here. I'm still a little cautious about this. It looks like the framework that the state developed in terms of what it expects every school district to comply with, and when we did this, we obviously did it through a universal statewide one system, that expectation on the part of the state will still continue under the Christensen proposal. It's just that the delivery mechanism will be different.
That's correct, Representative Mariani.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christensen, am I remembering this correctly? This is the situation where the state has already let the contract based on, I think it was last year's statute?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, yes.
So.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we will continue with a mandate on the schools to participate. We will have the state paying for one system, and then some school districts will decide to pay for access to a second system. Am I understanding that correctly?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, local school districts will have the ability to make the decision that's best for them, yes.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, but they'll have to pay for that.
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, presumably yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Department, did you want to weigh in on this? Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Fuser. I'm the Deputy Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. We just wanted to get on the record and say that so long as the district systems have system interoperability with the state system, that would now be allowed to continue to go through its process and develop. We are less concerned about the mandate in 18 and 19. We just want to make sure that is the case and that the district systems would still comply with paragraph B of the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. And you would like to weigh in, too. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, I'm Katie Perry with Education Minnesota. I work with the Special Ed Committee and attended all of the casework committee meetings last year before this bill was passed. And I would just like to note that despite the addition of the new language with the universal system, although that's a step in the right direction, there are several problems with it. One that Representative Dabney pointed out, which is that there will be an additional cost to districts. The statewide system would exist, and districts would not have to pay an additional cost for their own system, individual systems. The other thing is that we surveyed our members and received hundreds and hundreds of requests from our special ed teachers for a uniform online system that would reduce additional paperwork from districts. And so while the key thing is the portability of the records for the students, because the teachers spend a lot of their paperwork time, you know, re-entering transferred information from district to district, and a really important thing is that districts additionally, for whatever reason they have, require teachers to do extra paperwork that's just local. And so it's what the online, if everyone were using the same online system the statewide, it would reduce that burden for teachers as well and allow them to spend more time with their students in the classroom. Finally, I would just say from a logistical perspective that the language is premature. The language is not mandatory until 2018. I would urge you to let the law do its work for the next year, and then there will be time to iron out the wrinkles that need to be addressed. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Is there a further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No. No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bly offers the H1591A7 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
See, I think I have it here. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. This was in response to some conversation when I presented the bill that there wasn't any reason not to include or allow other institutions to participate in this. And I did talk with the people I've talked with about this in Mankato, and they were happy with that. They thought that would be fine. So that's all that it does, is just expand who can be involved in working on this.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Is there further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Moran, are you offering perhaps the A150276 amendment in regard to swimming instruction? Or Representative Mariani, are you offering it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, please. Representative Mariani moves the A150276 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have some individuals here that can speak to it if the Chair...
Certainly.
With the sole desire, if I have a constituent with a baby, so it's probably wise to move them along pretty
yes.
quickly.
Representative Clark, please bring forward your testifiers. This is Representative Clark's bill that Representative Mariani has moved as an amendment.
Thank
Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record, and look at these darling children. Isn't it wonderful? On our day when we have our policy bill out, we get children. Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you for hearing this amendment. It is a bill that I'm really happy that we can have considered today. And
please introduce yourself, Representative.
Representative
Clark.
Karen Clark, and actually Hannah Leader, who is my main witness, is my neighbor, and as are these children. And so she's been working really hard on the issue of swimming, and is going to talk with you about the issue of incredible disparities, health disparities related to drowning that occurs because we don't have swimming in so many of our schools. And she is an expert on this. I'm going to let her provide all the details. I believe Vic Moore from the American Red Cross is here in support of the bill as well. And Madam Chair, I'll just turn it over to Ms. Leader.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Please say your name for the record, and be sure you introduce the children too.
Oh, okay. Madam Chair, my name is Hannah Leader, and I'm a resident of Minneapolis, and I've pretty much been obsessed about swimming and advocating for swimming for kids for about 5 years, so I'm really grateful and honored to be here to be testifying today. This is Alina, and she is 3 years old, and her birthday's in September, so she doesn't start school next year or the following year. She's got a couple more years to wait. And this is Lewis, and although it might surprise you, he's only 4 months old. So I just want to say that I believe that you guys hold the keys to our future and for the state, because the importance of education just cannot be overstated, and I'm really grateful to be here. I'm also grateful because we are receiving services through the Minneapolis Public Schools and the Department of Education for the kids. We have a teacher that comes out once a week and works directly with me with the kids on their cognitive, social, emotional, and physical development. And it's been fascinating, and it's been so helpful for the kids. And I just want all of you to know how grateful I am for that service. But I'm here because of the physical development. Working with him with the physical development, you know, is really in kind of the same sphere as swimming. I don't know how many of you swim, but if you haven't, I would encourage everybody to go to a swimming lesson and see how much swimming is completely about brain development, strategies to overcome fear, confidence, self-esteem, and it's just... It's painful for me to see how many kids never have the opportunity to learn to swim because they don't have access or because they just plain don't have the money to be able to learn. So that's why we're working. We really would like to have a bill to require all kids to learn to swim eventually. She's distracting me. I'm sorry. hard to keep my train of thought.
That's okay. We understand what mothers need to do.
So Minnesota has some of the highest minority drowning rates in the country, especially regarding African Americans and Native Americans. And what's particularly appalling to me, which is why I got involved in this, is in Minneapolis the past few years, every single drowning victim in the Minneapolis lakes has been an African American child. So I really believe that in order to ensure that every child in this state learns to swim, we need you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for taking the time to come this early morning with the children. That is so dear of you to do that for us. Would the department like to weigh in, or others? Please come forward. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you, children. You're just so darling. Thank you. And Representative Clark, we have others who would
we'll go forward. And there's a possible request to include the Minneapolis School Board, the Minnesota School Boards Association in the list of stakeholders. And I'm happy to do that if you want to add that to the amendment. At this time, we can do it in the Finance Committee. But if you would take that as a friendly amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Clark, I think we'll add that in Finance.
Okay. So thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, my name is Vic Moore from the firm of Franzen & Moore, and I'm here representing the American Red Cross today. I want to thank Senator Clark and Representative Mariani for this amendment. The American Red Cross has been providing water safety education for over 100 years. We support this amendment. It's obviously very consistent with our mission to continue to enhance water safety in Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Does the department want to say anything about this, since we're asking you to do a little more work? Welcome to the committee. Please say your name and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Fuser with the Department of Education. I just want to make sure that I start out with saying that we obviously support the intent of Representative Clark's amendment. However, we just do want to point out that the report and the work group requirement within the amendment would have a fiscal cost to the department.
And Mr. Huser, we're sending this to Finance. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to address this? Further discussion, members? Ms. Whalen, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Clark, for bringing this forward. I actually was a lifeguard and swimming instructor for many years, and I'm very passionate about Land of 10,000 Lakes, making sure we can instruct students. I am curious if you happen to know the ages of the students or the children who so sadly passed away. And given that, what ages are we trying to get at these kids in school to teach them to swim? You know, because I remember I learned in sixth grade when I was in school, but a lot. I feel like, are we trying to get them even younger, or do we not know that yet?
Ms. Leader.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would be the happiest. The younger that the kids learn to swim, the better, because there's less barriers for them learning. You know, they're not worried about their hair and, you know, body images if we get them before they start, you know, adolescence. And then they're protected from drowning longer. So, yeah, younger. I'd like kindergarten, first grade, I'd like to start really young.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So according to the amendment, I don't see a specific age. So how are we going to, do we know how that will work, or how will those decisions be made about when we would start the instruction?
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I believe the work group would come up with those recommendations, and I am with you on the younger the better, and with Ms. Leader on that too. So I think the work group that can look through that, and hopefully we'll come up with a number of things, including the ages. I know that there are some states where preschool swimming lessons are available, and that may be something we can work on.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I'd be very interested to see if there are other states that do this at young ages, just kind of how that works. And again, just I'll say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you again, Representative Clark,
thank
and
you,
to
Madam
your
Chair.
Lovely family that you've brought to visit us. Is there further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Oh, thank you. Representative Wills offers the H1591A2 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one comment on the amendment we just adopted. I wanted to mention in the discussion about you're mentioning preschool, just something to note. In the amendment itself, it mentions K-12. So I don't know if it would necessarily consider pre-K. So just something that we may want to adjust going forward.
Thank you, Representative Wills. I noticed that too. But I think we'll discuss that in finance.
Sounds good.
My bill, I think, will be up in finance next Thursday. Our bill, I should say. The one I authored. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the A2 amendment is clarifying current practice when a non-public school student transfers into a public school. It's just clarifying that student wouldn't have to go back and take tests for grades that they weren't enrolled in the public school. So let's say they enroll at ninth grade, they wouldn't have to go back and take an eighth grade test, just to clarify that transition. And then also for out-of-state students transferring into a Minnesota school, district or charter school, the assessments the student would need to take would be only to the extent the student did not take comparable assessments in their previous school or school district. So it's just a clarification.
Representative Seltzer, discussion.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Wills. It might be kind of an obvious question, or maybe it's implicit in your amendment, but this, you're referring to formalized standardized testing, not assessments to see where the student is at. Is that correct?
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That would be my understanding, correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Further discussion? Oh, the department, yes. Welcome, Mr. McHenry. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. I want to thank Representative Wills for bringing this amendment forward. We do think that some of these missed opportunities students have in taking tests that we should clarify in statute. However, we think this should be a little bit broader. For example, let's say a student is hospitalized when the testing administration comes through. Would that be considered a missed opportunity? What if there's a death in the family? How would that student handle that missed opportunity? We also feel that we should clarify for parental opting out of testing, that should be clarified in statute as well. So we do support this. We think we have broader language in our, that was proposed in our policy bill, and we look forward to working with you all as this bill moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and that language I do have in an upcoming amendment. However, I think Representative Wills has it right. I've had this discussion with the department in the past, and I would hope that as the bill moves along, Representative Wills, that we can in fact, if we act on this, that we can in fact move to broaden it in the way the department has suggested.
And Representative Mariani, I think we'll have a robust discussion later about this. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Wills, any further comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mariani, I agree, and we'll, I'm sure, have those discussions. So thank you.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani, I believe you're offering the A150265 amendment. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I am. I'm wondering if I can just beg the Chair's indulgence. Representative Russo has a bill up on another committee. I know you've called on her before.
Thank you.
And we have her now. I'm wondering maybe we should take her amendment.
Yes, I was missing her, and so we passed by you, and we're back to you. Representative Russo offers the A1591A3 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, and I'll be digging in my folder for it while I'm talking. So you might recall that the other day we had a testifier. Thank you.
We're all helping you.
Yes, thank you so much. We had a testifier commenting on the readability of special ed forms for both the parents and the students. And so this amendment is a kind of first attempt to commit to that. And I realize that we haven't discussed this before, so this is a little bit late in the game, and we're bringing it up kind of to get the discussion rolling. So it would require the Department of Ed to determine the current reading level for forms and establish a target and then determine whether alternative forms would be needed. And after I had the help of Ms. Larson to draft this and submit it, I had another thought that we have other legislation in regard to insurance forms, for readability of insurance forms. So that's another thought, direction we could go. So I wanted to get a little bit of discussion going, and then I'm not sure how the chair would, you know, what would we prefer to do? You know, do we want to... We could put this on the bill now, or I'd also be willing to withdraw it for now and keep it open for further discussion later.
Well, Representative Russo, I think you have responded to a testifier who has had great concerns, and I really appreciate what you've done here. So I think we should have discussion about this, and we'll talk about the other later, the other forms to which she is referring. Discussion. Representative Kreisha.
Madam Chair, just related to this issue, I actually like the amendment a lot, and I think I like the direction. I would ask that you reconsider and go ahead and keep the amendment on. Let's get it onto the bill, and if we have to pull it off later or work the language, there's opportunity for that.
Would the department like to weigh in on this? Mr. Huser? Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Huser with the Department of Education. I think we fully understand the intent of this amendment and where it comes from. We're definitely concerned about those issues. I think our advice from the department would be perhaps maybe we could work on this a little bit further. We still have some questions about the amendment to make sure that it will actually get at what it's trying to accomplish. So we still have some, we would hope that we could maybe work on that first before it is amended to the bill. But obviously we'll continue to work on it as it moves through the process if it is amended.
Representative Russo, any response to the department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I think that the best way maybe to do that, move it forward, is to go ahead and we put it on and then we work with you and we figure out what needs to be done. And I think we've got there's kind of a real positive opportunity here.
Thank you, Representative Russo. And I think our department, I can sense this from the committee, our message to the department is if we don't alert you further to this, maybe we won't make the progress that we think should be made. So is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. A motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. And thank you, Representative Russo. Our testifier is not even in the audience today, but I believe you and I have addressed his issue, and so he knows it was coming forward. Representative Mariani, the A150265.
Madam Chair, I would move that amendment.
Representative Mariani moves the A150265 amendment. Please explain.
And Madam Chair, with your indulgence, there is someone here from E4E that can explain it very quickly.
Yes.
This has to do with the QCOMP salary schedule.
Yes.
Which,
thank
as
you
all know, has a bonus component in it. And the idea here is to find a way to use the bonus component in order to incent accomplished teachers to be able to fill hard-to-fill positions.
Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Holly Craig-Thorpe. I represent Educators for Excellence today, and I'm a Minneapolis Public Schools teacher. And we're excited about this chance to support our high-poverty schools with, you know, high staff turnover that they have, to really offer one layer of support for effective teachers to have an incentive to either stay at those schools or go to those schools. And current law requires that the performance pay section of QComp can only reward success for personal goals, team goals, and school goals. And so this would just offer flexibility if a district wanted to use that bonus in a different way, either as a monetary incentive or additional supports in the form of, like, additional preparation time for teachers in those hard-to-staff schools. We believe that districts should have this flexibility in allocating QComp funds for teachers to work in these hard-to-fill positions. And research shows that we can lessen the burden on hard-to-staff schools at several different levels, the school-wide level, the district level, and the state level. So we're working with schools and districts to develop plans for how to get our best teachers where we need them most, and we're asking your support at the state level.
Thank you, Ms. Craig-Thorpe. And did you check with school districts that have QComp plans to find out whether or not they would have to renegotiate, or maybe by the time this becomes law, if it does, there would be time for them to reconsider? Ms. Craig-Thorpe?
I did check in with QComp districts, and I had a very quick turnaround time, and my goal was to get a letter from them, and in the last 24 hours, unfortunately, I was unable to, because they need to vet that through multiple people in their departments and school leadership. I do believe that districts have this flexibility, and that there would be time if any kind of bargaining collective action needed to happen in order to use it in a different way.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Craig, for representing Mariani.
Madam Chair, it's a great question, and on that, on lines 217 to 219, it states that the session is effective in the upcoming year, school years. It applies to those pay agreements that are entered into or modified after that date. So I think the intent here is to, in fact, respect the local bargaining process.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, of course, yes.
Thank you, Ms. Craig-Thorpe. Further discussion, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Craig-Thorpe. Is that correct? Thank you. This is a great way to, I think, provide flexibility and so on for local schools. I like this a lot. Could you just briefly review for us how the highly effective or effective teachers are going to be identified? How would they, according to this bill? Just
Ms. Craig-Thorpe.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, we believe that this should be locally determined by the districts using their locally negotiated teacher evaluation system.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, and thank you. That's a good bill.
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. 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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani, are you offering the A150279 charter school provision?
Madam Chair, I am, and I would so move.
Representative Mariani moves the A150279 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
And Madam Chair, we do have Gene Piccolo from Max here who can do this hopefully very quickly, but basically this is an authorizer. It involves a number of authorized accountability measures having to having to do with the responsibility to provide services and guidance to schools, further delineating how they withdraw from authorizing, setting up an interim authorizer scenario in the case that that happens. There's additional language around performance evaluation for authorizers, and then language around terminating their contract. There's also some language here directed at schools themselves having a responsibility to notify parents in the event that there is a termination of an authorizer authority. Beyond that, Madam Chair, I'd ask Mr. Piccolo to explain the amendment.
Welcome, Mr. Piccolo. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Page 3, basically what we're trying to clarify is that when an authorizer's organization becomes an authorizer, it's the governing board of the authorizer that's making the decision rather than a smaller group within the organization. We've had a situation where an authorizer basically created a group to oversee the authorizing of the schools and made a decision to withdraw without the consent of the governing board of the institution. And so this would say, beginning up front, the institution has got to make that commitment, not just this group within the institution. And on 336, a similar kind of thing goes there. Also on page four, 1 through 10, clarifies that when an authorizer withdraws, several things that they have to give formal notice earlier than they are doing now, and that's going to be delivered by mail to the schools, that they must submit a financial report at the end of that year. We've had situations where an authorizer has withdrawn and has not submitted a financial report at when they've concluded. And if they have excess funding from the oversight of schools, that money goes back to the schools, that they are not being able to make a profit off of it, and then allows the commissioner authority to waive deadlines for transfers of schools in those situations. Then also on page four, we move down to 429 area. If a commissioner terminates the approval of an authorizer, that there is a process for notification and a transition period to a new authorizer, and that the new authorizer can charge, if there's an interim one, can charge a fee for oversight. Page 5, this basically allow, on page 510, clarifies a provision in the law about what governance structure means. This has been an ongoing issue, and we get legal opinions every year, and schools are charged all kinds of things. So this basically clarifies what the governance structure means in definition. 512 is another definitional thing, that there's a process for changing the governance structure, and there's separate votes. And then the next section deals with 514 through 529 for grade expansions, that if an authorizer has achieved a certain level of performance on the state's evaluation process, they are given more authority to make decisions in terms of those issues with their schools. Page 7, line 7, 11 through 13, clarifies that the school closing plan has to address how they're going to finance the closing of a school. We've had situations where a school is closed and they have no financial resources set aside for the closure, and so it's taken in some cases up to 3 years to close down a school corporation. And we are actually been talking with the department for a couple years about this, that one of the things we're looking down the line yet, that at some point we either got to require schools to set aside money or create a trust fund to be able to pay for this kind of stuff. And that's still something that we're looking at how to do down the line. Page 720 reduces the number of contracts and management contracts that have to be presented to the department, but then says all of those that meet the criteria have to be posted on the school's website. Page 8, 81 through 86, this has been an issue about records. When a school closes, under the records law of Minnesota, school districts are required to permanently keep all student records. Well, if a school district, a regular school district, closes, the records of the kids are going go to the new merged school. Well, charter school, when they close, they don't merge with anybody. They just close. And so there's been an issue of where are the student permanent records go. And so this would require notification of parents where they were sent, and also cumulative record be sent to the department so there is some permanent record where all these records went, because we do get requests all the time for records from years ago. Page bottom of 8 and through 9, it's basically to allow charters, if there's mutual consent, to change authorizers, only if there's mutual consent. So both parties have to agree. And so some clarification there. And that's it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify? Department, please come on down. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Sure thing, Madam Chair. Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. First off, for the amendment, we know this is a pretty broad and major policy change, and we just want—I wanted to make sure that that was clear on the record from the beginning. We are in the first year of our authorizer evaluation process, and we actually are reviewing our first cohort of authorizers of how they are performing, how they're performing academic, how their portfolio of schools are performing academically. How the charter or the authorizers are managing their charters, how they're helping to collaborate between the charter schools, and so we're actually learning a lot from the law that passed several years ago. We're actually learning a lot this first year in our authorizer evaluation system. To a point, the reason I raised that is on page 5.17, we haven't gone through a first year of our evaluation yet. And now what this would do is this would put in some, we want to have the opportunity to learn of how the system works and still continue to adjust. We haven't had a chance to actually see how the ratings actually happen, how the authorizers are performing. We do have some specific goals included for authorizers that they're performing well and they get high review. They will actually have opportunities to have streamlined contracts, that the renewal process will happen automatically. And that's if they are performing at a high level. And in here, the language is putting it at a satisfactory level. We'd like to keep that at a high level and actually continue to learn from the process. And if we need to make adjustments, I think that's something that we can come back, present to the legislature after our first year's findings, and have the legislature weigh in and say and indicate which direction they'd like the agency to continue going and how this process will continue to work. Moving back, and I apologize for going out of order, Madam Chair and members. Moving back onto page 3, on 3.29, we're not opposed to having ways of providing. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong page right there. We're not opposed to providing extra training and having that on our website. I believe that was in a different section. One thing we have to do as a department is make sure all of our documents and all of our presentations are accessible to all. And you all have heard from proponents coming to the committee of where they liked us to expand our ability to make documents more accessible to more individuals. That does have a cost. That does take significant time on our department. And so while we do provide these trainings, we want to make sure that if there's any other evaluations going on or if anything else goes on to our website, we want to make sure that it is accessible to all. We want to be careful of what we're requiring in place of any trainings. The issue that I think that Mr. Piccolo starts raising on page 4, this is another interesting issue that we have been struggling with as a department. We do think we need to have, I've mentioned this to Mr. Piccolo, I've mentioned this to charter organizations, the charter school partners, and others, that as we are moving forward with this authorizer evaluation system, we are holding authorizers accountable, and they do have to perform at a high level. Some authorizers right now are making decisions if they want to stay in the authorizing business, and they're as we are going through the process as well, there may be some authorizers that don't perform as well. For example, when authorizers are reviewed for how they're performing, they may score unsatisfactory. And if they do score at a very low level, they actually have to go through a intervention process so they can approve what that authorizer is doing as far as holding their schools accountable. When they're in this, when they're in that time frame, if they don't improve, they may not be able to, they won't be able to continue to add schools, and they may not be able to continue authorizing unless they make significant improvements. This is an issue that we understand. We think we need some input from charter school organizations. We need input from authorizers, and we need input from legislators as what happens when, let's say, an authorizer is not going to be able to continue moving forward. What happens with those schools? Where should those schools go? And so this is something we've struggled with. Mr. Piccolo and I have had conversations on this, and we were thinking this was an issue we were going to have to address down the road. Unfortunately, there is an authorizer right now that is withdrawing from the process, and so we're moving forward. We're trying to find ways to address this issue up front. However, some of the ideas that have been raised in here, just as far as the transition period to a new authorizer, this could really lower the bar potentially for what the department has to do for overseeing our authorizers. Again, remember, authorizers are holding our schools accountable. If we have an entity that's not as an approved authorizer, why would we have that organization or entity oversee charter schools? On 4.33, it does indicate that the entity agreed upon between the school and commissioner for this interim process. However, that is a very significant process. We want to make sure that authorizers who are holding schools accountable are doing their jobs. And if we have a streamlined process where we're not actually overseeing and we're not actually holding the entity to those high standards, that we might actually be hurting the work of the charter schools. And if we're hurting the work of the charter schools, that's actually hurting the work of the kids going to those schools. We want to continue to be part of this conversation. We realize there are some issues that we do need to have addressed. We want to work with the Charter School Association. We want to work with the Authorizer Association. We want to work with charter school partners, and we want to work with the legislature, because we think we need to get more than just one perspective involved into this discussion. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony and appreciate again the opportunity to testify and briefly respond on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Mr. Piccolo, you wanted to respond.
Yes. Just a comment about the transition period. We originally had thought of putting a date of how long that transition period could be when the commissioner withdraws the approval of an authorizer, and pull that out, because it should be a short period of time. But there is a period of time just to go through to apply to a new authorizer is oftentimes a 6 to 9 month process itself. So there needs to be some time. And so we took out the time period in there to try to leave that more flexible with the department.
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, we definitely appreciate having some flexibility. But as you recall, last session, we worked diligently to really clarify this timeline, so it was clear to charter schools, it was clear to authorizers, and clear to all legislators and advocates on this issue.
Mr. Piccolo.
And this provision only deals when the commissioner is withdrawing the approval of an authorizer's authority to authorize schools. It does not affect any other timelines that exist in law now.
Are there others? Mr. Sweeney? Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Brian Sweeney, and I'm with Charter School Partners, a nonprofit charter support group here in the Twin Cities. Appreciate you hearing the part of this bill that begins at 9.27 to 10.6 last week, and appreciate the input and the support that encourages authorizers to increase their accountability and quality as they monitor the charter schools. Haven't had time, just saw this amendment last night, and I would just like to point out one point that Assistant Commissioner McHenry pointed out on 4.29 to 4.35. Eugene Piccolo brought up two very important, these are very legitimate and important issues. They deal with potential orphan charter schools that all of a sudden don't have an authorizer because the authorizer decided to move on. And also this touches on something which we have some concerns about, which is authorizer shopping, which we want to avoid as, I think, a policy in the state, that if a authorize, or if a charter school may not be performing well and loses an authorizer or wants to change to another authorizer, maybe because they don't have as high a standards as the current authorizer. So I'm not making a recommendation on language. I'm just pointing out that those are very legitimate issues as we move forward in the next couple of years. As Mr. McHenry stated, we're at the beginning process of an 18, 24-month process of reviewing all authorizers in the state. So.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, obviously I've moved this amendment, and I do want to honor the work of Max. However, I think there are some legitimate issues that have been raised here. I've actually seen yet another one, or Ms. Larson had pointed out a possible another one that just has to do with wording. It seems to me, first of all, I am convinced that the issue of higher rated authorizers is, you know, so this is about driving quality. I think that's highly important. It does seem to me that on 429 or 4.35 that when we consider the other elements of the bill, we may no longer be in situations where all of a sudden an authorizer pulls out. And so I think part of what we're dealing here is just, you know, the current, you know, context in which that's possible. And so, Madam Chair, you know, just because of the timeliness of where we're at right now, I would still urge that we adopt the amendment. I would commit to work with Max and charter school partners in the department. And if we're not fixing those particular pieces, then I would certainly, in Finance Committee, which I serve, I would certainly move to strike this entire provision. However, I get it. The committee should definitely feel comfortable moving anything forward. If the committee is not comfortable moving this amendment forward at this time, I certainly understand.
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question for the department, if you could come back.
Mr. McHenry. Please say your name again for the record. And
Mr. McHenry, I happen to be in office when the authorizer evaluation or the redoing of looking at authorizers, and I was hearing from charter schools and from authorizers that it was a very rigorous application process, and I read through all of the applications. And what surprised me was that there was a great variation in what was in these applications to be an authorizer. And in some cases, there were some that were approved that were, I would say, inadequate. I mean, not that the quality of the what they were saying, but there just wasn't much information there. And other authorizers applying gave lots of information, and yet they were asked to resubmit and go through even a more rigorous process. So, all I looked at was the paper, so I don't know how it all worked, but it struck me as that there were issues, that there were problems in looking at these authorizers. The other thing that concerns me about the whole process of asking for or putting in place a system where we evaluate the authorizers and therefore they evaluate the charter schools is that and we narrow the focus and narrow the way that we evaluate these schools, we lose the possibility for some innovation, which was the idea behind charter schools. And although I agree we need to hold schools accountable, we need to make sure that the authorizers looking at them should be held accountable, but has the department I don't know in the initial setting up of the authorizing applications how much work was done with charter schools or MACs or because of the concerns that were brought to me at the time, I was worried about that. And I guess I'm pleased that you're saying you want to work with the various stakeholders, and I think that's really important. But I want to make sure that we aren't building a system that results in limiting the different kinds of charter schools that we have and limiting the kinds of authorizers who will defend those programs and the kinds of pedagogy that they may be, that may be very high quality but not be the norm, not be what we normally expect, and it may be difficult to evaluate those schools in the same way. So I'm interested in what you might have to say to those concerns.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, again, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I think there's a couple different points that you're raising here, Representative Bly. The first issue, I think you're referring to when we changed from sponsors to authorizers, and are you concerned about that application process? The second piece right now is what we did develop. Once we did change from sponsors to authorizers, we developed a very clear process. We tried to get as much input as we could from organizations that are that if they're applying to have a new charter school, if they're applying to be an authorizer, if they're applying to expand the spectrum of what the charter school is doing, we tried to have a very clear process that is very that provides enough detail, and we provide significant amount of feedbacks to really be helpful to both the authorizers and specific charter schools as they're dealing with specific issues. What we're trying to do in that division is make sure that the goals of what each of the school and authorizer are, that the authorizer is being very clear in what the school will do to reach those specific goals. In no way, shape, or form are we looking to stifle any form of innovation. Because that, you're absolutely correct. That is one of the issues that was brought forward in the charter school movement. And one that we'd like to see actually happen more, and we'd like to be able to be more supportive in terms of not just innovation, but how that can be replicated to other charter schools. And we've tried to be very supportive of that and with our federal grants as well. On the evaluation process that we're just starting now, that's something that we involved significant hours, days, weeks of stakeholder engagement as we were building the system. We worked with authorizers in particular very extensively to get their feedback on how we could proceed with developing this evaluation system. It took a significant amount of time. We worked with outside organizations such as the National Charter School Authorizer Organization, because we are the first state that's actually doing this evaluation system on a state level. So the stakeholder process was very important to us as we were building this evaluation system, and it will continue to be important to us as we are getting into this first cohort. We'll learn more information, and I think we'll need to actually adapt to what we're hearing from authorizers, how that process is working, and how that impacts charters and schools. So again, we don't want to. We're not looking. We're trying to ensure that the goals of what the authorizer and charter school that they are being very specific in how they will attain those goals, allowing, we're not trying to limit, we're not trying to, we're still trying to, we want to allow for innovation. We will continue to evolve, include stakeholders, and I think it's important as we've been discussing this issue in relation on page 4 on lines 4.28 and on, is that we are serious that we really want to include stakeholders on this. We feel this is a major, major policy decision that should be beyond just the department. It should be beyond just the charter school advocates. It should include the legislature, because this would be a significant policy change, and it's something that we need to include all stakeholders in coming to a decision on this. I don't think this is something that we can just fix quickly. I think this will be an ongoing process. One of the things I said to the charter school partners, to Max, and to the authorizers is this is something we need to get these groups together over the interim. So appreciate your concerns. We'll continue working and appreciate raising the question. Madam Chair, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I think there's been good debate here. I think there is more work to be done on this. My understanding is we may have a pathway in the next week to be able to continue to work on this, and hopefully we can convince our Rules Committee then to honor the work that we subsequently do, and then keep this moving forward. So at this point, Madam Chair, I think it's been a rich debate, but I'll withdraw this amendment, and hopefully we'll have this discussion again very shortly.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And because this was a very late entry to our bill introductions, I think it would be wise if we scheduled this bill next week, perhaps on Thursday, so we can really discuss these major changes, and then perhaps, as Mr. McHenry has suggested, there be a group that discusses some of these major policy changes. So with that, Representative Mariani withdraws the amendment, and that was coded the 850279 amendment. Representative Mariani offers the H1591A8.1 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would so move.
Please explain.
And Madam Chair, I would like a roll call on this.
And you request a roll call. Roll call has been requested. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'll try to do this very quickly. And as I stated earlier this week, and I was quite sincere, Madam Chair, I think technically the Chair has put together a technically sound bill. There's a lot of balances here, a lot of, you know, different moving parts, and that's what you want to see in a good omnibus policy bill, and hopefully one that where, you know, there's consistency in terms of principles that cut across. And so I think technically there's a good bill before us. However, Madam Chair, there are still elements in this bill which members, particularly in the minority caucus, find problematic. Some of those elements, some of the major elements, are the issues that were debated on the House floor for 6 hours a couple of weeks ago. And so, Madam Chair, it is not my intent to go over those debate points in any kind of depth. Let me just say that, there were some unfortunate comments. It usually happens on the floor because it's the floor, about, you know, motive and intent. But, you know, Madam Chair, there is a strong, sincere thought and concern on the part of many of us regarding to the impact that the layoff provision in here would have on our TD&E system in our state, particularly impacting the collaborative element that makes that system work. And the introduction of a high-stakes outcome outside of the TD&E process, which, you know, sets up, you know, ability for professionals to grow, learn, train, et cetera, we really strongly feel that could have a corrosive effect on the collaborative element of TD&E. In addition to that, Madam Chair, we're terribly concerned with the unlicensed, the ability to place unlicensed professionals in classrooms via the community experts expansion provision in the bill. We think that's counter to many of the quality arguments that both sides have consistently argued about. The other major piece, and someone from the, I think it was Mr. Amoroso, testified on this, and the superintendents, you know, the stepping in on the part of the state to micromanage teacher assignments, that are present in Article 1. And so that's where you've got the overlaps with many of the big components, House File 2, with the elements in Article 1. And so this amendment would basically strip those provisions out. In addition to that, Madam Chair, the amendment works off of Representative Bennett's testing assessments framework. And I do want to acknowledge Representative Bennett's good work relative to making sure that we did not wander into setting a high-stakes cut score. I think it's important that we stick to that. However, we do think that by removing her provision and replacing it with the department's provision, we don't do violence to what she's doing, but we also do add some critical components, including, quite frankly, three fewer tests that will be mandated. That's embedded in the MDE proposal. And then more forceful student empowerment language of expectations of our school systems via the use of survey instruments that really empower students relative to their career and college readiness plans and expectations. And then, Madam Chair, in addition to that, the amendment would add a few provisions that we consider value-added provisions here. One we've actually already done, I think it's in the bill, in the amendment, and that's the QCOMP bonus incentive There is a provision here from Representative Dabney, and he can explain it, having to do with recesses. And then there's also a Dabney provision that strengthens Representative Bennett's language in relationship to the convicted felons in the classroom. We saw that same language on the floor of the House, and I think everyone voted for it when we debated House File 2. And then Representative Moran and I have been working on a teacher of color advancement proposal. Everyone in the legislature has repeatedly talked about and identified the lack of diversity in our teaching corps, and unfortunately many of those ideas have not gelled quickly enough for us to be able to have introduced them earlier in the session. However, we are introducing a proposal inside this amendment that would do that. So, Madam Chair, very quickly, that's the scope of the amendment. I think it gives us an opportunity, certainly on this side of the aisle, to be able to vote for good things that are currently in your bill, and hopefully have a stronger bipartisan bill that would move out of this committee.
Thank you, Representative Marai. Is there further discussion? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani, for focusing briefly on the recess provision. Right now, state law has no requirement that districts have a policy around recess. We've been through 10 years or more of high-stakes attitudes towards school, and unfortunately what that's meant is that schools have focused in on just a few elements of the curriculum and squeezed out not only other elements of the curriculum, but squeezed out things like lunch and recess that kids actually need. And the research is very clear. Not only do little kids need to get up and wiggle, but they also do better in school after they've gotten up and wiggled. That unstructured recess time has positive educational and academic outcomes attached to it. It has positive physical development outcomes attached to it. The language in this amendment related to recess does not tell school districts what to do. It just says you have to have a policy. And that, by doing so, it empowers parents to be engaged with their school districts on developing that policy and assuring that their children get not only the academics they need, but the conditions so that they can best take advantage of those academics through good recess, research-based recess policies and practices. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I would like to speak in regards to creating a more direct path to really bring it in, bringing in teachers of color into the classroom. You guys have worked really hard. This has been an awesome set. So thus far has been a really great opportunity to do some great work within our educational system. But as you know that, within that piece, with all the great teachers that we have in the classroom, for whatever reasons, we still have great disparities within communities of color. And we're not saying that this is the all to creating better outcomes for kids of color, but we think it is also an opportunity to create a pathway for engaging in a more intentional way to get teachers of color into the classroom. And it also creates an opportunity for those individuals of color who are already in a school setting, who have relationships with the school, but also have a relationship with the children within the students within the school system, to create a path for them to also go into a teaching program. So my hope is that you will find some value in this path, and that you will create an opportunity that we will, in the state of Minnesota, be more intentional in recruiting teachers of color into the classroom. So I ask for you to consider that option.
Thank you, Representative Moran. And I know we're hearing one of your bills Tuesday, and Ms. Mayo and I will discuss your other bill as to, well, do you know if the bill to which you're referring now that you've included has made first deadline in the Senate?
I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay, we'll check
that.
Thank you. It's an important provision. We certainly agree. Further discussion? Well, yes, Representative DiRusso.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I'd like to speak in favor of this that Representative Moran was talking about, because the one of the issues for kids that come from disadvantaged communities is that they don't have the ready role models sometimes within the community of people that are in professional careers. And this is not, you know, merely an inner-city phenomenon. My own mom would have had that same kind of experience when she was a kid, growing up and embarrassed, where the majority of the parents had not had a high school education, and they struggled with English as a second language, and they were subsistence farmers, pretty much, in that case. Her teachers in her school were the people she saw that had professional careers, and the people she saw that had gone to college. And she and her sister both then went to teacher's college after that. So I think it's very important. It's not just about instruction. It's about providing those role models for kids that lets them know that they can use education as a tool to get ahead and make life better. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, members, of course, this is a total deviation from our innovation piece that we have before us, our amended 1591. I'm hoping that in streamlining our licensure process, we are going to encourage those from other states and more diversity to come into our state to teach. We're offering the portfolio style application, reinforcing that. It's in law, but it hasn't been used. We think that's an excellent way to bring others from outside the state. As far as our seniority-only repeal of teacher layoff, we believe that we've moved at this time to a place whereby we want to honor teacher performance as well as seniority. And so we want to offer districts and bargaining units that opportunity to sit down at the table. I know there are some concerns, but I think this could be a great discussion as we go forward with this bill. So with that, members, I would ask you to vote no. And the roll call has been requested, and the clerk will proceed.
Madam Chair.
No.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Mariani.
Yes.
Bly.
Yes.
Christensen.
No.
Daffy.
Yes.
Kreisha.
No.
Lucero.
No.
Moran.
Yes.
Nornes.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Pearson.
No.
Seltzer.
Yes.
Erdahl. Hello. Ward.
Yes.
Whalen.
No.
Wills.
No.
Winkler.
Yes.
Yarusso.
Yes.
There being 11 no's and 8 yeses, the amendment is not adopted. And we proceed to the final amendment of the day. Representative Mariani, are you offering the H1591A 10.1?
Madam Chair, I am, and I would so move.
Representative Mariani moves the A101 amendment. Please explain.
And Madam Chair, you may want to ask the department to head down here because this has to do with their testing recommendations. So, Madam Chair, this was embedded in the other amendment, but it isolates the issue of our statewide testing assessment framework. And as I said earlier, so I could be very brief here, there are a couple of advantages to this relative to the language that's currently in the bill. One is that it adds career and college readiness composite scores from MCAs to outcomes in the district plans that are required of all districts and are required to be aligned with the world's best workforce. In addition to that, the it replaces the testing regimen currently in the bill with an alternative proposal, and the department can go through that very quickly, but essentially it would move the math MCAs up from 3 to 7 over to 5 and 8 plus 11th grade. It would set the reading MCAs at 3 to 5 plus add 8 and 10th. Obviously, with a strong desire to make sure that we're attacking, not attacking, I'm sorry, wrong use of words, but that we're really promoting literacy at the earliest grade possible. Science that is set at 5 and 8, plus also in high school. And then, Madam Chair, the final major provision, and I spoke to this earlier, has to do with what I call student-centered assessment planning approach and set of expectations of the state, where schools must use career exploration elements to help students and families explore and plan for post-secondary or careers based on a student's interests, aptitudes, and aspirations. And I believe the proposal from the department has to do with deploying surveys that are not required, but that will be offered. And so, Madam Chair, I think that there's some real advantages here. This also does speak to the issue of the unable to test issue that Representative Wills raised earlier in her amendment, and the department actually expressed support and empathy for, but also wanted to be able to expand those opportunities for other circumstances, including things like hospitalization, students are, you know, facing hospitalized realities. So, Madam Chair, that's it, and I'd ask the department to fill in or correct anything I said that I may have misstated, because I'm kind of famous occasionally for doing that. So,
Madam Chair, McHenry, welcome, and please say your name again and begin.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, again, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I think you know, we have testified on this already. I think Representative Mariani did a great job of covering the key highlights. We are interested in moving this proposal forward. Two things I did want to bring up. One that we're trying to get as clear information as possible on lines 4.12. The task force did recommend having the option of having the ACT offered in 11th and 12th grade. We do want to offer as much flexibility as possible, but in dealing with the ACT and when that can be offered, there could be a potential cost if it's offered in different grades. And that's something we're continuing to work with ACT, and we'll continue to work with you all to get some specific information from them. And again, we do appreciate the opportunity to hear this. I think Representative Mariani covered this very well.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Further discussion? Well, members, I would recommend a no vote. What we did in designing our bill was follow the recommendations made by the task force, with one exception in that we made the ACT optional and offered districts some other flexibility. I want to quote from a blog that comes from Generation Next. As you know, the former mayor of Minneapolis heads that organization. And they write in their blog, to summarize, it is the stance of Generation Next that data and assessments are only as good as their uses and must not be wasteful. The question of whether there is too much or too little testing is not as important as whether our community and schools have relevant information that is actionable. So thus, they recommend that the task force struck a good balance by eliminating some tests but keeping useful reading and math assessments. It is imperative that our community has information on how students are doing in third through eighth grade in reading and math. One-size-fits-all solutions doesn't work. And that is from Generation Next. Ed Trust has already weighed in on this, too, in recommending our position on testing. And I've heard from parents who have said that they're very concerned that they know what their students are accomplishing in reading and math in grades 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, actually 6 and 7 as well. Whether it's reading or math, I think our parents, especially in our communities of color, are saying we want to know how our students are doing. So with that, committee members, I would recommend a no vote. And no roll call has been requested, so all those in favor of this amendment say yes. Those opposed say no, no. And the motion does, the amendment is not adopted. The motion prevails for a no vote. So, members, with that, thank you very much, committee,
Madam Chair,
for the work. Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, I do have a couple questions.
Please, let's have further discussion.
Thank
yes.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just a couple of quick questions. In relative to the conversation, the quick conversation we just had about testing, there is language that's a little confusing to me. On page, can't find my note, but I'm pulling up memory here, page 43 of the bill, on lines 43.10 and then again on 43.16. And I'm wondering if either Representative Bennett or you can answer. When we add writing on 43.10 and 43.16, what are we doing? Are we adding an exam here? Is this a new test? It's not clear to me what this is.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From what we're doing here, being the ACT assessment had a writing component, when that was taken out, we needed to put a writing back in. So this is bringing the state writing assessment back in.
So,
Representative Mariani.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, so I get that, but mm-hmm. by bringing it back in, are we adding a new exam then? Or are we replacing the ACT component with a MCA type exam? I really honestly don't know, so I'm just trying to understand.
Representative
Bennett. And if we can't figure it out here today, I think, you know, perhaps we should spend a little bit of time in before the bill moves forward and getting some clarity on what that means.
Yep.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Mariani, thanks for your question. This is actually replacing the we took out the writing component, there has to be a writing assessment. So this is replacing an assessment. It's kind of a trade-off.
Representative Mariani.
Okay, I think Ms. Larson may be able to help us here.
Ms. Larson.
I may indulge the chair.
Madam Chair, members, on page 38 of the H1591DE1 amendment, paragraph C, which refers to current law, in clause 2 talks about achievement and career and college readiness in math, reading, and writing consistent with paragraph J. And so if you refer over to paragraph J, which begins on the bottom of page 40 and on to page 41, I think the point here is, because there are references to knowledge and skills, is to ensure that reading, writing, and math are reflected in readiness for any of these three alternatives, a certificate, a two-year, or a four-year program.
That is our intent, Ms. Larson. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Mariani.
And Madam Chair, I don't know if this is so much of a question as much as an observation, but in section 6, we have an immediate effective date relative to the change of the skills test for licensure upon enactment. There could be an argument here that, given that there are people already in the pipeline and that we have a, you know, they're currently under a different set of expectations, that the immediate enactment may create some issues. And you know, we only have 10 minutes here, so I don't think we need to debate it at length, but I do want to highlight and flag that for you, Madam Chair. And then, Madam Chair, one other piece has to do with Section 8, dealing with the portfolio, the use of a portfolio for licensure. I think it may be important for us to be really clear, if we're not clear, whether the portfolio is an optional piece or a required piece. Obviously, that would have some fiscal implications depending on how that goes. And then, Madam Chair, the final piece I would flag for you is the flexible learning year piece. I understand we lifted up the Miller language, or percent Miller language, and embedded it in the bill. I did arrange for a meeting with Representative Miller and the Commissioner relative to the flexible year idea. because I actually kind of like it. And I didn't start out in that position. I heard the testimony from people in greater Minnesota. You know, like most things, there's always this issue of balance around, you know, quality control, you know, because this does depart, you know, from the way in which our society has structured, you know, K-12 delivery, which is a five-day delivery thing. And so the commissioner had offered to Representative Miller to, she also expressed flexibility on this and had offered that districts should consider tying their student outcomes relative to the four-day availability to the world's best workforce outcomes. And so, again, you know, it's like, okay, well, maybe you guys could do this, but let's make sure you're held accountable for student outcomes. And obviously the world's best workforce is our statewide accountability framework. That's not in here, and so I will certainly speak with Representative Miller about that. But, Madam Chair, as you move forward, you're going to run into that discussion with the department, at the very least, and perhaps with the Senate as well. And so I just want to flag it for you in case Representative Miller did not have the opportunity to do that with you, because I think that you might have the ability to have a pretty decent compromise here where these communities would be able to continue to do this, but do so, you know, under a, you know, an accountability measure tied to student outcomes. So, Madam Chair, I won't dive into some other issues. I wish I could support the bill, but again, the Article 1 provisions, I've been very clear publicly of, you know, my posture. I think those are big enough for me that they really make it very difficult for me to support the entire bill, even though I think there's some really good provisions in this bill.
Looks like you have to take
time. And thank you for your suggestions, Representative Mariani, in regard to the flexible learning year. Senator Wigger and I have had an earlier conversation about that as well, and I know we'll proceed in the future to have that. In regard to the portfolio is presently in law, so it is not an option for the Board of Teaching or the Licensing Division. It has been in law, and there was no authority not to use it. So what we have done here, of course, is offered as an option to a candidate, but it is not optional for the Department of Education not to include it as a way to become licensed. So I just wanted to state that for the record. Is there further discussion? Representative Russo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remain concerned about we seem to be simultaneously loosening some of the requirements for out-of-state people while tightening them for our own candidates. And I'm particularly concerned with the very first thing that the DE does on line 1.8 and then scattered throughout, the phrase college level being placed in front of skills. And my concern is that this is a rather large kind of unfunded task for the Board of Teaching, because although it's pretty easy to say this in the bill, it's much, much, much less easier. It's much more difficult to define exactly what do we mean. And so I think it would be good if we all had some guidance on exactly what that's supposed to mean. Because I don't know. I mean, we could talk for quite a bit about what college-level skills in mathematics would mean with regard to various kinds of degrees people obtain in colleges that people go to and whatnot. And reading, it's the same. It might seem simple, college-level reading, but as soon as you get beyond the very beginning courses, every course you take beyond your 1,000 level has prerequisites of stuff you took before, and you're expected to have subject-specific knowledge and apply that to your reading and your writing. So what is the guidance on this? What do we mean by college-level skills?
Well, Representative Urusso, as you know, that is a phrase that I think is important. And I base it on the fact that we have high school students today taking college courses. So they're reading, they're writing, and if they're taking mathematics courses, are at the college level. The same is true of our concurrent enrollment courses. So if we're expecting our high school juniors and seniors who are enrolled in either of those or taking advanced placement or international baccalaureate as well, they are reading and writing allegedly at a college level, because that's what those courses are. They're college level. So college level here is what you would be able to do as a sophomore probably in college, a freshman and sophomore, and you would have exposure to that. I think a lot of our candidates who come into our programs have taken PSEO courses and concurrent enrollment.
So, Representative so Madam Chair, what is your definition of college-level mathematics?
Of college-level mathematics?
Yes.
It would be, I suppose, I shouldn't say I suppose. I haven't given considerable thought to mathematics, but the sophomore level, I think, would be that which would probably fall in line with our high school standards in mathematics because of what we require at the K-12 level. That, I think, would be the expectation from my perspective.
So you're saying Algebra 2?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because the majority of college sophomores do not take mathematics. And for writing, at the sophomore level in courses, you'd be writing subject-specific stuff, and the way you do writing is very different. So I've got concerns that I anticipate that this is going to cause quite a bit of grief. If we put that in there without more guidance than that. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Members, I'd like to call for a roll call, please. And so with that, I would move the 1591 as amended to be recommended to or be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. And the clerk will prepare to take the roll.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Mariani.
No.
Bly.
No.
Christensen.
No, you have to be at your seat, Representative Christensen.
Yes.
Well done, Madam Chair.
Daphne.
No, from my seat.
Kreisha.
You're all seated.
Yes.
Lucero.
Yes.
Moran.
No.
Nornes.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Pearson. Seltzer.
No.
Erdahl. Ward. Whalen.
Yes.
Wills.
Yes.
Winkler.
Nope.
DeRusso.
No.
10 ayes. 7.
There being 10 ayes and 7 noes, the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. And members, with that, thank you very much for a very productive day, and look forward to seeing you Tuesday, and have a great weekend, and think of Ms. Mayo on Saturday. With that, the meeting is adjourned.